This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is another Layla Weighs In with me, Layla Mutin, Hoffman Center Nutritionist. As many of you know, I'm an RD. I also have a master's degree in nutrition and exercise. And I welcome your questions. So do email me with any questions. And you could send your email to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And I've got a question here from Alan. Alan, thank you for your question. And by the way, I also answered this question in a recent newsletter article. So if you don't get our newsletter, do subscribe. It's free. You go to drhoffman.com and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hi, Layla. Alan says, which is better, borage oil or evening primrose oil as an anti-inflammatory, and in addition to the omega-3 fatty acids? Well, Alan, that's a great question because a lot of people want to know. We know about the good omega-6 fatty acids. We also know about the bad ones. But amongst the good ones, which is the best? Now, borage oil is actually derived from the seed of the plant Borago officinalis, and it's also known as starflower. Evening primrose oil is derived from the yellow wildflower, Oenothera bienis. Both of these oils, along with blackcurrant seed oil, are rich sources of GLA, that's gamma-linolenic acid. This is an essential omega-6 fatty acid. And, as you know, not all omega-6s are the same. Most of what we're getting in our Western diet comes from the processed vegetable oils. These are all promoters of inflammation. Even though American Heart Association says, no, you're better off having vegetable oils, they're more heart healthy, they're actually not. Not the processed vegetable oils. I want to make a distinction. Borage oil, evening primrose oil, blackcurrant seed oil, these are definitely not the same as your corn oil, your canola, your safflower, sunflower, all of these other oils that you would use in cooking. And the problem in our Western diet is we get too much of the omega-6s, and that causes an imbalance. GLA, gamma-linolenic acid, on the other hand, is an essential omega-6, and it helps to reduce inflammation. There is some research that suggests it may even protect our DNA. So, GLA supports our immune health as well as our cellular health. And it confers the anti-inflammatory benefits when it converts to DGLA, which is the precursor to anti-inflammatory chemicals called prostaglandins and also antithrombotic leukotriene. So in this method, it helps to reduce inflammation in the body. But for this conversion to take place properly in our bodies, we have to have sufficient levels of magnesium, of zinc, the B vitamins, and vitamin C. So if you're on a poor diet and you're taking your vitamins and your supplements saying, this is going to compensate for my poor diet, I'm sorry to tell you, that's wrong. It's not going to work nearly as well. And you want to make sure first, food first, you know, 70-75% of our nutrition from food, the rest from supplements. And supplements are necessary in various conditions, in reducing inflammation. And, you know, therapeutically overall, not just as general insurance. So coming back to borage oil, another benefit of the omega-6 fatty acids, rather, they're shown to reduce symptoms of diabetic neuropathy, eczema, you know, that skin rash, eczema, acne. Very good for acne, because this particular omega-6 it quenches the skin. It's very, very good for the skin. These omega-6s can also help with PMS and breast pain. For those who have painful breasts, whether it's related to PMS or all throughout your menstrual cycle, taking borage oil or even evening primrose oil can be helpful. Some research has actually shown a mild benefit with rheumatoid arthritis. You know, that arthritis that's an autoimmune condition where the immune system is attacking the joints. It can help to modulate the immune system. Other research has shown the omega-6 fatty acids to be useful in reducing hypertension, but not nearly as much as fish oil. And other inflammatory conditions such as asthma, borage oil can be very helpful in asthma. Now, the difference, which is better, borage or evening primrose oil? Well, get this. Borage oil contains much more GLA than evening primrose oil. And the gamma-linolenic acid, the GLA, from borage seeds, contains only tiny amounts of pyrrolizidine alkaloids. The pyrrolizidine alkaloids, particularly amabilene, is known to be toxic to the liver. But amabilene and the other pyrrolizidine alkaloids are mainly concentrated in the leaves and the flowers of the borage plant. When you source your borage oil supplement, you want to make sure it's coming from the seeds of the plant. So you don't have to worry about the amabilene, all right? Much, much, much less toxic. It's really not even there. EPO doesn't have as much GLA as borage oil. That's why my preference is borage oil. But, you know, everybody is different. Everybody is individual. Some patients and clients tell me they feel better with evening primrose oil rather than borage oil, and they've tried them both on various occasions. Guess what? I believe you. I want to go with what makes you feel better, what reduces your symptoms, what clears up your eczema and your acne, what relieves your PMS symptoms, your breast pain, all of that, which, you know, and when your skin is glowing and you're healthy and you feel well, that supplement is working for you. So, Alan, thank you very, very much for your question. I hope that answers it for you. I want to talk to you next about the dietary guidelines. You know, they're due this fall. The U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services publish the dietary guidelines for Americans. And these guidelines tell all folks across America how to eat, a diet, you know, what type of diet to follow that promotes good health and can prevent disease. The dietary guidelines actually began in 1980, and it's generally updated every 5 years or so. These updates are influenced primarily by reports prepared by the DGAC, that's the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee. And who's on this committee? These are, quote, nationally recognized experts in the field of health and nutrition, and they are actually commissioned to review all the scientific literature and then to make their recommendations to Health and Human Services, as well as the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Now, the new guidelines, or a few recommendations from the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, guess what? First of all, we are told that we should not take environment into consideration in making our dietary choices. And here's what I mean by that. There are many environmental aficionados and people who are saying that we should eat a more plant-based diet. I absolutely agree with that. We should eat in a way that is sustainable, that causes the least amount of damage of carbon footprint to the earth. I completely agree with that. Now, for instance, animal husbandry requires a lot of, unfortunately, the factory-farmed animal, or meat industry requires the growth of a lot of grains, a lot of soy crops and corn, so many of them GMO, to feed the animals that are raised. But this is not the way that the animals should be raised. It should be more grass-fed. Anyway, the point I'm actually trying to get to, without getting away from it, is that not to make the environment a priority in making these guidelines, these dietary guidelines. Now, let me be very clear. I agree that we need to take care of our environment. We are patrons of our environment. We are the keepers of our environment, and we need to do right by it. However, when it comes to a question of our health, I have to beg to differ on this point. For example, if, say, an all plant-based or all vegan diet is being promoted, well, yeah, maybe it can help save the earth, but as a vegan, you're going to have to eat a lot of those grains anyway, because you can't just eat vegetables and fruit. But a vegan-based diet for many people, I think for most people, isn't altogether healthful. It's lacking in essential amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein. It can be lacking in iron, in vitamin B12, in many critical nutrients, and even in vitamin A, as opposed to beta carotene. So this is where I do have to agree with the committee that we should not bring the environment into question when making up these dietary guidelines. It does have to be a health issue, a health-only issue. All right. Another recommendation from the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee is that dietary cholesterol, you know, the cholesterol in your egg yolks and your meat and your butter, is no longer listed as a nutrient of concern. And the reason for this is, based on recent research, there is no association that is significant between dietary cholesterol intake and our serum or blood cholesterol levels or risk of cardiovascular disease. I love that. So everybody, put away the egg whites, and certainly if you're using the containered egg whites, which are made of vegetable oil and salt, put that right into the garbage can. Start eating your whole organic eggs. Another recommendation from DGAC is that they're no longer recommending fat intake to be as restricted. Instead, the new recommendation is to emphasize the use of healthful fats like olive oil and nuts. Yay! Finally, while avoiding all the harmful fats, and we're talking about the factory-made trans fatty acids. And as a matter of fact, we've known since the 1950s or 60s that trans fatty acids were harmful, and it was originally done in a swine study, a pig study. So, unfortunately, it can take this long for scientists, not good scientists, but the scientists who are involved in politics and have to get along and play with big food. It could take a long time for these guidelines to change and trend in the right direction. So, we are all encouraged that the new dietary guidelines will promote healthful foods like fish, like nuts, you know, and they have a good high fat content. These are good fats, as well as vegetables, fruits, legumes, and recommending lower intakes of refined carbohydrates and refined grains. This is wonderful. So, yay, let's see where all this winds up later this fall. And I will be talking about that again as well. And lastly, speaking of dietary guidelines, you know, I'm not a fan. I never was a fan of the USDA's food guide pyramid and now the myplate.gov. You know, MyPlate, it's no longer a pyramid, it's a plate. Well, any guideline or general nutrition information, I think all general nutrition advice should come with a warning. Now, I'm reading from a very popular magazine. I won't name names, but it's a magazine that's devoted to people over the age of 50. You probably know what I'm talking about. And here's an article about ways to cut your cancer risk, ways to stay healthy right now, the top ways. And one of the subheadings is ways to cut your cancer risk. And they say, and I'm reading from the magazine, grab some grapes. Resveratrol, a compound found in grape skins, helps to prevent cancer by killing the damaged cells before they replicate, according to a University of Colorado study. And red wine does provide this compound. If you don't imbibe, however, eat a handful of grapes or have a morning cup of low-sugar grape juice. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm a nutritionist, so I know that there's no such thing as a cup of low-sugar grape juice. Grapes contain a lot of fructose. And this is not terrific advice for cutting cancer risk because of the resveratrol. You'd have to eat a whole lot of grapes to get the amount of resveratrol that you would normally get from a supplement, which would be much more beneficial to your health. And because grapes contain a lot of sugar, did you know that cancer loves sugar? So this is not great advice for people who want to prevent cancer, and certainly not the juice, because any amount of juice, I don't care how many antioxidants are in there, I don't care that it's organic, I don't care that it's fresh squeezed or any of that, it will have the same impact on your blood sugar as a glass of Coca-Cola. That's the truth. In addition to why this is not great advice or, you know, a health warning should be issued before taking any general nutrition advice, is that with my cancer patients, I advise them not to eat certain fruits that are high in sugar. And guess what? Grapes is one of them. So, not terrific advice. We have to give everything a context. So I would hate that a layperson who has cancer or is trying to prevent cancer or who might be a little on the overweight side being given this advice and then going out and drinking grape juice. Not great. It's not going to help you with your weight issue. It's not going to help you with cancer prevention. It's not going to do any favors to your blood sugar and not to your waistline. Some more general nutrition advice coming out of the same magazine. They talk about ways to prevent diabetes. First of all, mind your medications. If you're already taking your diabetic medications, make sure you're taking your doctor's you're following your doctor's instructions, your prescription dosages, and so forth. And check before taking any supplements with a qualified practitioner to make sure there's no kind of interaction. But here's what else they advise for ways to stay healthy and avoid diabetes. Listen to this. Limit red meat. And let me read it for you. Let me read it to you verbatim. An analysis of the diets of almost 150,000 people found that eating an extra half serving a day of red meat increases the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by 50%. Now, this is really, really dangerous to heed this advice for a number of reasons. Let me get into this. First of all, the average, quote, meat eater, end quote, in scientific research is also sedentary, overweight, eating French fries with their meat or their burger. They're a smoker and they're a beer drinker. They're not making a distinction between a healthy red meat eater, a grass-fed meat eater, somebody who is not sedentary, somebody who is not also eating fried food or too many starches or anything like that. Another reason that limiting red meat is very bad advice for people with diabetes or those who are interested in preventing diabetes is that meat is a main source of protein and fat in your diet. If you're not going to eat meat, then you're subject to eating too many carbohydrates. Let me remind you the definition of type 2 diabetes. It is a condition of carbohydrate intolerance. You need more protein and you need more healthy fat that goes along with your grass-fed red meat. Okay? So this is very, very bad advice for those trying to prevent diabetes. Now, fix it with food. Boosting your magnesium. They're giving advice that getting your magnesium from oatmeal can help your body secrete insulin properly. More bad advice. And again, issue warning, warning, warning. If you have diabetes, you shouldn't be eating oatmeal at all. Okay? Except very, very occasionally, and checking your blood sugar. Magnesium can be found in all kinds of other food sources that would be more appropriate for somebody with diabetes or prediabetes or metabolic syndrome. Nuts and seeds, for instance. Meat, for instance. Dark green leafy vegetables. Magnesium is in a lot of different foods. So I think it's very bad advice or very unsound that they're advising to get your magnesium from oatmeal to prevent or to control your blood sugar. The magnesium in your oatmeal is not going to prevent your blood sugar because you're eating oatmeal. Get it, everybody? Okay. Listen, I welcome your questions. Let me remind you again, email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And I thank you for listening to this edition of Layla Weighs In on your Intelligent Medicine podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.